So, okay, then, time for today's last talk in this room. Before we begin, a few words of information. You had heard that today at 6 p.m. we do a concert number 2 in the Kubus, which will be technical demonstrations by several developers, how they performed or created certain musical pieces. And after that, at 8 p.m., we have another real concert. 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. Yeah, and once again, just like on Thursday, all speakers and other active musicians, etc., can get free tickets at the ZKM shop down here. You can just ask, and if your name is on this list, you get free tickets. The others will have to pay, I think, 5 euros. There is one entrance ticket for both concerts, the one at 6 p.m. and the one at 8 p.m., so don't throw it away after the first one. And of course, after that, then at 10 p.m., we start with the relaxation phase with beer and stuff. Okay, that apart, now it's time for the last talk by François Deschelle and his colleagues Patrice Cisseron and Simon Champier. I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly. Champier. François is also, by the way, our biggest sponsor for the audio streaming. We have a whopping 100 megabit uplink through the Aircom in Paris, so thanks for this as well. And François, here you go.
Thank you. This talk is titled Audio Networking. I would say the subtitle could be How the Hell Could We Use Today High-Speed Network for Music and Audio. I'm going to talk about two topics on which we have worked at Aircom. First is the Distributed Virtual Concert Project. I'll explain, also take this occasion to talk a little bit about network protocols for real-time audio streaming and the libraries that implement those protocols, and describe briefly NJAM, our implementation. I will also talk about our experimentations in grid computing. First, what it is, some number of middlewares to build grid computing grids that we have used, and some benchmarks that we have done in the future. So what is the Distributed Virtual Concert Project? The idea is to distribute a concert that is both the musicians, but also the sound engineers, and of course the public, on the internet. And to allow people to play together on the internet, but to play with audio streams, not on MIDI, audio. So the performance is geographically distributed, these people are located quite far away, and they exchange real-time audio streams over standard internet, not special lines, just plain internet. Whether this has musical meaning or not, I would not enter into this discussion. I even myself already have doubts whether it is really technology that is today usable to really play together. But at the same time, the technologies that are developed can be applied to many domains. For instance, it can be used to diffuse concerts, that's to stream concerts in high-quality multi-channel format. And it can be used also for other application areas, such as virtual or augmented reality distributed applications. And this project is a joint project between Aircom and CNAM. CNAM is an engineer school located in Paris, and we are working with a team of CEDRIC, which is a computer science laboratory of CNAM. There exist a number of similar projects, and playing across the internet has already been done in a large number of performances. I will not make an extensive review of a project, just mention a few ones. One project is a SoundWire project at CCRMA. SoundWire project, in fact, has two goals. One, which is very closely related to our distributed virtual concert project, is to use networks with high quality of service for musical collaborations. The SoundWire project uses, in fact, Internet 2, this very high-speed network. The second goal of the SoundWire project, which I have not mentioned there, is to use sonification to identify network quality problems. That is, you transform the network measurement parameters that you can extract with probes, and then you transform that into a sound, and by hearing that, you can say, oh, there's a problem in this router at that point. Second project, well, in fact, it's a number of projects carried on at GRAM, center located in Lyon, in France. You've heard Yann Orlaret yesterday. Yann Orlaret is at GRAM. And they have worked on a number of issues related to musical collaboration over internet and network. One project was the distributed rehearsal with a conductor in one place and the orchestra in another place, and with both audio and video communication between the two places. They have also developed a network protocol for events streaming, and they have worked also on clock skew compensation. They have developed an algorithm for clock skew compensation. I will explain later a little bit what is clock skew compensation. And many other projects or performances, as I have already said, using either special ISDN lines or using MIDI over internet or using OGG Vorbis sound streaming and so on. What are the issues related to musical collaboration over internet? Of course, first problem is network latency. Network adds a latency, but worse than that, this latency can vary a lot, because of the routing that is applied to IP packets. The route can be different for different packets. Network can have congestion. So you have no guarantee on the time that a packet issued at one source will take to reach its destination. Moreover, this latency can change because of the protocol that you use. If you use TCP, for instance, the congestion algorithm of TCP changes the latency in order to try to saturate the bandwidth of the connection and to exploit as much as possible the available bandwidth. But this implies that TCP introduces another latency, which is, of course, added to the latency that comes from routing. Problem is that latency and more particularly varying latency is difficult to manage for a musician. We all know that on modern operating systems, there are some operating systems that are better than others regarding the latency, and then Linux has a very good latency performance, but a performance that is, would say, better case in the order of 3 milliseconds, which is below the usual threshold that is considered to be about 10 milliseconds, can vary a lot, depending what you play, kind of sound, and so on. But in fact, already if you are on one machine, you have a latency that is introduced by the machine, hardware and mainly software, that is already close to the acceptable latency threshold. If we do that over a network, of course, we completely blow out the latency threshold. On the best network that you can find, the latency will be in the order of a few tenths milliseconds. Then another problem. Another problem is the question of real-time and transfer reliability that usually are not you cannot obtain together. Real-time means that you have some, even if not guaranteed, I would say some reasonable guarantee, even if not total, that a packet will take some time and a fixed time to reach its destination. Transfer reliability means that every packet that will be emitted will reach its destination. Transfer reliability is a property of TCP. Real-time is more a property of UDP. UDP is not reliable. TCP is reliable, but is not real-time. Another problem, if you have n number of sources, musicians, and a number of destinations, well, sources can be also the sound engineers, and you have a number of destinations, public. You must have a link between each source and, we'd say, almost each destination, which means a number of links, which is the quadratic with respect to the number of locations. Which means that if you add one source, you add n times, where n is the number of participants, the necessary traffic for one source, which means that very quickly you have a very high traffic. We made an estimation, it's quite large. If you target an 8-point distributed concert, approximately 50 megabytes per second. In fact, most of this traffic will be duplicated because it will be one source, the stream of one source, duplicated to all the destinations. And this can be handled now by modern networks. It's called multicast. It means that the copy of a packet is not handled at the source, but during routing. The problem is that multicast is not available on every network. That some networks provide native multicast inside the routers, others do not. For instance, if you have a private connection using a DSL line, DSL access providers do not provide native multicast in their routers, which means that you must duplicate in software the different streams. And then last problem, a problem of the clock skew. You have one source, which means one sound card running at a certain clock, and a destination, which means another sound card running at another something clock. Another does not mean 44100 and 4800. It means 44 and 101 hertz on one side, and maybe 44100 or let's say 99 at the other hand. But it means a very small difference that will lead to periodic buffer underflow or overflow, depends on the relative ratio. And this cannot be avoided because the clocks are completely determined by hardware, and you cannot synchronize the hardware. You could, in fact, but it would be very complicated to implement. So you must compensate these skews, which means that you must first identify them, and then you must find a way to compensate them, either by shifting samples, by resampling, or things like that. A few words about network protocols for audio. Network protocols for audio, there are a number of protocols. I will just describe very briefly the protocol that we have used, which is called RTP. RTP is in fact two protocols, RTP and RTCP. RTP means real-time protocol. Very clever. It's a protocol for audio and video applications. And RTP uses UDP as the transfer layer, which means that it's in fact on top of UDP. Something that is not very clear here, in fact, UDP and RTP can be seen both as transport protocol, which means that even if one protocol is built on top of the other, they fall into the same network layer. What does RTP provide among a number of other things? It provides packets typing, that is, each packet contains a payload type, which says this packet contains H323 encoded video or contains two channels, 16-bit audio, and so on. And it also provides time stamping, that is, each packet has a field, which is a time stamp, which identifies the time at which this packet was produced at the source. RTP, in fact, does not work by itself. RTP always comes with RTCP. RTCP is the control protocol that is associated. RTCP uses TCP. At the same time, RTP is on top of UDP. RTCP is on top of TCP. And RTCP is used to provide control and reporting. For instance, RTCP allows to report the number of lost packets. So it can be used, for instance, to identify the quality of the transfer and to feed error recovery stages. A number of other protocols, but which are, would say, less interesting for now for our project. There is the SIP protocol, which is session initiation, and SDP, which is a session description protocol. It's mainly to be able somewhere to get a list of the multicast sessions that are already running and to join a session. And then there is the real-time streaming protocol, RTSP. The name is not that clear because it gives the idea that it's a protocol to transfer sound, but it's not, in fact. It's a protocol to transfer commands between streams, such as GET, PLAY. It's more or less the equivalent of HTTP, but in both directions. RTP is a kind of standard for real-time audio and video streaming. The problem is that RTP, in fact, is not available. Well, it's available under a number of libraries, but which are at quite a number of different steps of development and which are really not standards at all, in the sense that they're not packaged. Some of them have no CVS sites, and so on and so on. So we've made a kind of review of RTP implementation. There is an implementation, Live Media, that is used by these two libraries, VideoLAN and MPlayer. By the way, I was saying that there are at different code maturity level. For instance, Live Media is a C++ library. That is interesting. It implements quite well RTP, provides good interface, but it's a static library. It's right now, the compilation only provides a static library. More than that, instead of being linked with VideoLAN and MPlayer, the source code is copied into VideoLAN and MPlayer. I'll let you imagine the facility of maintenance. Then there's CCRTP. CCRTP is a GNU project that is still alive but not very active. It's also a C++ library. There's Vovida, and then there's the UCL command library. In fact, it's library that was developed inside the MBone project, a project that has developed Vic and RAT, which are two multicast video tools. One conclusion may be that finally there is a need for one good RTP implementation on Linux. I cannot tell you that we are committed to do that, but maybe one day, don't know. NGAM. NGAM is the implementation of a distributed virtual console inside JMAX using the UCL RTP library. It supports multicast. How does multicast work? Very briefly, multicast is identified from the application point of view by multicast address groups. That is, you join a multicast address group, and then when you will emit on this address, you will emit, in fact, to a number of receivers that have subscribed to the same address group. And the source will be identified in the packets, the IP packets, that are routed between the different points. So how does NGAM work? Each participant sends its local sound on a multicast address and receives on the same address all participant streams. That is, you have a number of streams exchanged on one address, and everybody sorts out the other streams and do something with it. What is done first? It's a resynchronization. I've said a few words about latency. A problem with varying latency is that it's quite impossible to play. So there are a number of possibilities to overcome this problem. One possibility that has been explored is to resynchronize everybody on the worst case, which means that you delay every stream, the number of samples that you have to delay can be computed by a distributed algorithm that uses the RTP timestamp to identify each source delay and try to find the minimum delay that can be applied to compensate and to resynchronize everybody to the same, say, the same tempo. Then you can add an extra delay so that you are synchronized with the tempo, which means that, in fact, all musicians will hear themselves with a delay, but all streams will be mixed together at the right tempo, which means that they won't be shifted when doing the mix, and that the result after the mix will be coherent. But it means that every musician must play in advance. But they must play, if they get their return by using the result, that is the mix, they hear themselves with approximately one beat, or maybe more, delay. That's quite difficult to manage, but happens that it's feasible. Well. And so, experimentation. We have tried that. It was a distributed concert experimentation. I say experimentation because it failed, of course. It was during last year's Resonance Festival at IRCAM. Four musicians, bass and battery on one side, clarinet and guitar on the other side, on two sides. No native multicast, which means that the multicast was implemented using in software and using a tunnel between the two sites, which adds some latency and reliability problems. What we did was a rehearsal, mainly, because the public presentation failed. And why did it fail? Because of a port scanning attack on one site just before the concert. The problem is that there is no quality of service on standard internet. So if someone starts to launch a number of process scanning every port, trying to find a Samba server or any Windows machine that are quite well known to be attackable, then all these packets are routed with the same priority as the audio packets, which means that the audio packets are lost. And so many when too many packets are lost, then you can no longer resynchronize and it does not work. But something that we have observed during the rehearsal was that finally musicians trying quite fast. I have a small example. It's not brilliant. It was recording during the rehearsal. Of course, the rehearsal was also the occasion to debug the stuff, to fix software problems. And in fact, when you do some kind of concert, you must have a phone, you must have webcams, of course, and be very patient. So, now, right now the concert is implemented inside JMAX. It would be better to have it available to more applications. And if not used to make concerts, it may be useful to have an RTP streaming client for Jack. That's something that we are developing. It's developed by Simon Champier. The goal is either to use it to implement this distributed concert project outside JMAX, but also to provide a networking Jack client that uses standard protocols. There is already the Jack UDP client, for instance. There is also the Jack ICs client. But RTP is maybe more suited for real time, so it would be interesting to have it implemented for Jack. To be clear, it's not something to build audio clusters. If you want to build an audio cluster, then you don't use RTP, you use directly audio over Ethernet, because you won't have all the protocols, you will be much faster, and you will have guarantee of latency, and you can add a dedicated network card, for instance, to build your cluster. There has been recently discussion over the LAD mailing list about that. So clearly, standard network protocols for audio are not to build local high-speed networks of machines to speed up audio processing. The first development uses the Live Media Library. It supports multicast, and it's under development. And of course, it will be announced when it will be available, which I hope not too far away. So what's the future? Future is finish the implementation using Jack. The problem is that if you have a Jack client, you must control a few things. For instance, you must control the resynchronization, that is, by how much beat you delay everybody. It means that there is this delay that is added to resynchronize everybody, but you can add an extra delay so that you can adjust the total delay. And currently there's no implementation of a clock skew compensation. So the idea is to try to implement the algorithm that was developed at Gram. But the problem is when you implement the clock skew compensation, every time a skew occurs, that is either buffer underrun or overrun, you must add or remove a number of samples. But if you do that, you break the resynchronization algorithm because you change the delay, which means that probably you must resynchronize everybody. We don't know exactly right now how we could do that, to try to find a clever way to do that. But it looks like it's not a simple problem. And then there's a question of to make large scale tests. Anyway, right now, this kind of stuff is reserved to high-speed networks, I would say some kind of university networks, where you can have native multicast and, if possible, quality of service. Usual answer of people managing this kind of networks is that, well, we have made such a provision of bandwidth that we don't need quality of service. Our thinking is that this is wrong and that probably even if they have a very large provision, you need quality of service. And the problem is that quality of service is something that is not really standardized yet, and that if you really want to make it work, it's quite complicated. And then there's a question to consider private home connections using either DSL or cable. Problem is that they're not symmetric, which is the upload is slower than the download, which means that to output the stream, you must add some compression. And then second problem, you don't have native implementation of multicast, which means probably that you have to provide a number of relays that will do the multicast, that are connected by a multicast network, but in this case, you add some extra delays. Okay, that's for the distributed virtual console. Second point is some experimentations on grid computing. What is grid computing, apart from a very in favor buzzword today in information technologies? The idea is that you have a high-speed network, well, a really high-speed network, and you have large number of machines, either desktop machines, or you have big computing centers with high-speed clusters, and you want to make some kind of virtual large-scale computer that is available from every node of the grid, and that when you run a job, you don't know if it's run locally on the local cluster or on a distant cluster, or if it's splitted onto different nodes of the grid. Grids and cluster are different. A cluster is usually a number of Linux machines locally connected with a very high-speed network, and most of the time it's the same version of operating system libraries and so on running on each node of a cluster, and you have some specific software to control the jobs where they are run and so on. And usually it's available only to a few persons. A grid is completely geographically distributed. Current projects consider building grids at the European scale, with connecting a computing center everywhere in Europe. What's the target of grid computing technologies? Well, it's high-speed computing. Means, for instance, particle physics, simulation, climate modeling, and so on. It's something that is clearly still under development. There's a number of standards that are emerging, but they're not completely stable. Currently, the standard is the OXA, it's Open Grid Service Architecture, and it's based on web services. How this can be used for audio? Well, audio is probably less demanding than particle physics, but you have one desktop machine. Well, it's powerful, but the network connectivity that you have evolves and doubles twice as fast as your CPU power. Means that behind the network, you have a large number of desktop machines that are idle most of the time. And maybe, sometimes, it may be useful to use them. For instance, if you want to process large sound databases, make queries and things like that. If you have a large sound database that is available somewhere, and if you want to make queries inside, probably you need some large machine to run the software, can be also a grid. Another point is that you can use applications remotely. That is, you don't need to install locally your application, and it's mainly the case with web services that an application can have a web interface, and that using only a browser, you can use an application that runs somewhere else, and that you don't need to install it. And then, for instance, it can be used to explore large parameters spaces. That is, instead of testing one after the other a number of parameters value, well, you run all in parallel, and then you compare after and select the best cases. So, more precisely, at YerCam, we have some requests from some composers to want to run, for instance, physical modeling code. Physical modeling is very, very computing intensive. And if you want to compute a piece using physical modeling, and if you use your single computer, then it may take some time. If you have access to a grid, then it may help. That problem is by how much, that's still an open question. And also what is interesting is that with grid technologies, you can be at home and you can even there use a grid. That is, as the computing power is completely distributed, it's available from anywhere because it offers secure connections. Which means that it's not reserving the computing power to people inside an institution, it also means offering this to a larger community. Of course, not maybe everybody because of security, accounting, and so on, but it's possible to give accounts to other people externally, and it's even possible to connect different centers so that they put together processing power. Right now, we are not there. We have just made a very small deployment to test the technology, the software technologies that are behind. And we're not using a dedicated cluster. We are using what is called cycle stealing. That is just you use the idle times of a network, local network of standard workstations using now Linux, but macOS 10 soon. And we have tested two middlewares. Of course, something that is essential in a grid is the software that allows to distribute the jobs and get the results and assure that you find a proper machine to run your job and you get informed when it is finished and you get the results and so on. Right now, these middlewares were not so many ones and were not completely satisfying. We have tested first the Globus Toolkit. Globus Toolkit is a toolkit that has been developed in the US for some time. It's the base of large-scale grid deployments. For instance, it's supported by IBM. And we have tested also something that is called Extreme Web. It's developed in France. It's much lighter than Globus, but it does not target exactly the same stuff. At the final stage of a possible deployment, something that is really not decided yet, we may have something like 60 machines available. What is a Globus toolkit? It's free software. All the software that we have tested are free software. It's the base of many grid deployments today. What does it provide? First, security with authentified connection. It allows to submit a job and to control whether it's finished and, or not, its error and so on. It provides high-performance, secure data transfer that is implemented on above the grid security module. And it provides system and service information. For instance, it provides the monitoring and discovery service that identifies the idle machines and that is used by the job scheduler that selects the right machine that is probably the most idle machine and decides where to run your job. So it's really, really heavy. Installing the Globus toolkit is really something that you should not consider if you don't have some time and, well, after 1 hour compilation, you get something like 250 megabytes installed. And even with that, you must still do some hand configuration to run something. It's efficient, it's standard, it's portable, it even runs on Windows, but it's heavy and it's not packaged. So I've considered also Extreme Web, which is much lighter. The idea of Extreme Web, it's more dedicated to desktop grids. Globus is more to build grids of computing centers and grids of clusters, for instance. It can also be used to build grids of desktop machines, but it's maybe too heavy. Extreme Web is much lighter and it's used to build grids of desktop machines. That is, on each desktop machine, you run what is called a worker. It is a process that will, when it is scheduled and identifies that the machine is idle, will download a job, execute it, and upload the result. It will download its job for a number of servers, which are also called dispatchers. And then you have clients that can run on other machines and that are used to submit and to control the jobs. It's much lighter, a few megabytes. It's portable, Java, but it's less efficient and it's not stable. And there is another toolkit for grid that is we have not tested. It's Boink. Boink is Berkeley Open Infrastructure for Network Computing. Boink was used for the well-known SETI at Home project. We may consider it, but it's at the first glance, it looks like that it is the same performance level that Extreme Web, maybe more stable, but don't know. And, well, the title is wrong because there is no comparison with Extreme Web. Anyway, the result with Extreme Web are worse than with Globus. What is done here, you run a number of CSUN computations. X-axis is the number of jobs that you run, 1, 2, 3, 4, etc. And Y-axis is the speed up, that is the time that it should have taken divided by the time that it took. That is, if you have a speed up of 2, it means that it took half the time than it would have taken on one machine. The reference is running the job on one machine. And what do you see? You see that with one job, you get a speed down. That is, it's slower. Of course, because it adds an overhead. Select the machine where to run the job, transfer the files, run the job, get the files back. You start to have a speed up when you run two or three jobs. But the problem is that it's quite disappointing because this test was done on a four machines grid. In theory, if things would be correct, you would expect a speed up that is, well, probably not four, but I would say more than three, between three and four. Here you get maximum speed up of two, which is quite bad. So, quite disappointing. Well, yes, but at least we know why. Problem is that current grid middlewares are programmed for large jobs, that is, jobs that take a lot of time, which means that the overhead of transferring the files from the submission machine to the execution machine and back is small compared to the time of a job. Here, it's not the case. And in audio, in general, it won't be the case. The job will be at most a few minutes, not a few hours. So how can you gain? Well, simple. You overlap the transfer and the job, which means that you start the job and you start the transfer at the same time, and that the job gets its input file streamed on its input, and then it outputs its result streamed back, which means that, in fact, the idea of transferring the files does not work. What you need is a streaming architecture that streams the input data and the output data at the same time as the job advances. Problem is that either you must change the jobs, because CSound, for instance, outputs a file and takes an input file. It does not take an input stream and an output stream. Well, it may take input, standard input and standard output, but in this case, you must copy the stream, which is a TCP socket, on the standard input and copy back the standard output to a TCP socket. But using that, you may expect that you have a correct overlap of the job execution and of the transfer. And if you have a high-speed network, the network won't be the bottleneck. And other issues, well, I won't expect system engineers to welcome the idea of installing Globus on every machine of the network. I mean, it's clearly too heavy. The problem is that other solutions are not satisfying as well. But maybe, don't know, it will probably evolve. Our test bed is quite small, but must start somewhere. Then there is a question of heterogeneity. And, machines of in a grid are different. You can have Macintosh, you can have Linux, you can even have Windows machine, though I will not really consider that because of stability problems. And if you want to run a job, then you must be sure that it is compiled for every architecture of a grid, or that it is installed on every machine of a grid. Both toolkits can do executable staging. That means that they can copy the executable from the submission machine to the execution machine by selecting the right executable to copy. But it implies also that the library's version and so on and so on, which is quite difficult to manage. But our feeling is that despite the first results are not that good, it may offer interesting possibilities if first you have something, a middleware that is quite easy to install and deploy. Then you have a few machines, I mean it can be either 4, 5, 10 machines, and you have a number of small jobs to run in parallel, for instance, make a piece by making a large number of C-sound computations, or making of, if you want to try a large number of parameters, and if you want to retry parameter adjustment, well, if you have that behind, you can try more easily and much faster. So it may offer interesting possibilities, and probably it will offer something interesting the day it is connected to the streaming technologies that are at the same time developed within the distributed concert project. And then something that you can do is that you can explode one application, one job, and make it run on different machines. How do the different jobs communicate? Using MPI, which is the standard, it's message passing interface. And that when you have a communication between two jobs that are part of the same application, then you have an MPI message. The problem is that MPI speed can be an issue. There are some applications, for instance, physical modeling, that implies sample level computation. That is, the inner loop must be run at each at a sample rate because there are interaction between the different bodies of the model at the sample rate. If you put the different bodies of the model on different machines, it means that for each interaction between two bodies that are located on two different machines, you will have MPI messages, which is way, way slower than accessing variable, which means that in this case, you won't gain anything. Problems is that not all applications can be easily parallelized that way, and that parallelizing an application is quite an important software development task. Then there is the question of merging. The idea is that something that will be available in the next future of next version of the Globus Toolkit is the idea that using web services. What is a web service? It's a way to run an application on a remote server using XML and SOAP messaging. That's the way to make machines consume a lot of CPU, which means that you always need faster machines. It's a way to run an application remotely by just finding the application, feeding inside input parameters via XML, and then getting the results using XML and SOAP messages. So it's the same idea as I told earlier, the idea of remote applications, that in fact to use an application, you don't need to install it. You may use it via a browser. And this application may run on a grid and not only on one server machine. And then there's this idea of integrating it with a streaming architecture, as I said, to get better performance. That's it. If you have some questions now.
Victor?
It seems that the problem is it's how coarse-grained a computation is. And in the case of the physical modeling, it's probably finely coarsely-grained.
Well, it depends if you consider the inside of the application or the outside. The inside of the application is probably very fine grain, which means that this is not applicable to grid architecture. Maybe even a cluster with very high speed network is not enough. You have very optimized versions of MPI for clusters, but even that is cannot be compared to memory access.
Because I've done some experiments with MPI and BeWolfs and things, and you know I was just basically doing additive synthesis, which can be you know coarsely grained, and I found out that the trick was to try to match the buffering to specific values that would match well with the Ethernet connections. Mm-hmm. That would run quite well. But that seemed to work well on machines that were, as I said, you know, in a cluster situation where machines that were uniform. I'm not sure how it would work on a non-uniform system.
I don't know. The problem is that it's also the kind of network. If you have a Beowulf cluster, it's not a standard network. It's, for instance, a Mirinet network, and it cannot be compared from a speed point of view with a local network. And on what kind of application did you make?
Well, I've just done some experiments with adjective synthesis, you know, just basically resynthesizing, you know, large sort of sub-banks of oscillators for machines, and then, you know, just basically collecting everything through via just launching the applications on the cluster and then collecting all the data. Mm-hmm. I had the impression that, you know, it could be an interesting way of things doing things, but I didn't have much time to explore it fully. Mm-hmm. And it's been a while since I've done this, and probably things have moved on a while.
More questions?
Yeah. I assume the experiment was done on IPv4 over the internet.
IPv4?
Yeah.
No. Well, the experimentation that has been done was on IPv4, but we are now IPv6.
Are there any improvements with the quality of service provisions in IPv6 compared to IPv4?
The problem with the quality of service, I mean, you can have quality of service with IPv4. Quality of service uses a special field of the IP packets. It's a type of service for IPv4, and it's, I don't remember exactly the name, for IPv6. The problem is that there are a number of different versions of quality of service. The currently, the quality of service that is implemented is DiffServe. It means a very complicated reservation protocol from the source to the destination, and it's not that easy to deploy.
Is that at the IP level?
Sorry,
is that at the IP level?
On the
The IP level in the protocol hierarchy.
It's in the routers that it must be implemented. And it's something that must be implemented in the routing software. On Linux, you have a number of implementation of different quality of service algorithms, DiffServe and others. And so if you use a Linux machine as a router, then you have, I would say, more freedom to implement different types of quality of service. If you use standard routers such as Cisco or others, you have DiffServe, I think, maybe others. The problem is that it requires a lot of support from the network engineers. And right now, the experiments that we plan will be on RENATER. RENATER is a French university and research network. And they do not deploy quality of service by default. First, you must go to them with a project and say, for this project, which is very interesting, we need quality of service. And this is why we need quality of service. You see here that figures, you don't provide that right now. So you must give us quality of service. And their first answer is no. No, you're wrong. You don't need quality of service. You need to redesign your configuration, application, and so on. And anyway, we are so fast that you don't need quality of service. Imagine that they provide a guaranteed 2.5 milliseconds transfer time from north of France to south of France. Quite fast. And if you insist a lot, maybe you can get quality of service, but right now I've not heard of projects which have been developed and deployed using quality of service. So I'm afraid that, I mean, we have discussed that with them, and their answer was, for that, well, it's ridiculous. I mean, 50 megabytes, it's, I mean, it's a joke. For us, it's a joke. They are involved, usually, this kind of network infrastructures are involved in very high, massive data transfers. I think that the recent record in the network transfer was in October. It was between CERN in Geneva and Caltech, and they have transferred a DVD in 7 seconds. Network. I let you imagine the hardware that is behind. So, yeah, I mean, it's, if you have that at home, you don't need to go to video shop at the corner. But it's not for the, for everybody. So the problem is that I don't have a feeling that the quality of service for audio and multimedia is well considered now by standard networks. And now if you go to DSL access providers, and you tell them, we have an interesting project, but we need native multicast. And they tell you, what is multicast? So, so currently I would say that the conditions are not that good to try that kind of experiment. So you must do that by yourself, either using tunnels or don't know. And there is still the question of whether it is really interesting for musicians. So that's another issue. I mean, to know if it's interesting means probably trying it.
Okay, as we are already a bit over our time, and as we only have 45 minutes left for eating something until the next concert, so at this point I'd like to stop this here, and if you have further questions, I'm sure Francois is still available for these. And then it's thank you.
Well done. Some funny point in there. Some funny point in there, hard to notice.
And then, as said, at 6 p.m. we start with the technical demonstrations over in the Kubus. Entry tickets can be bought at the ZKM shop down the floor for €5. And speakers are, of course, free.